2 days ago, Jeff McDonald posted the following.
Just watched the sunrise from above the clouds. So stoked.
Jeff got 19 likes and 7 comments. Not bad, Jeff. Geico has a comment to add that may make you even more stoked. In just 15 minutes, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance by switching to Geico. And if that doesn't put your head above the clouds, you'll have the extra money to scale a peak that will. Hashtag on cloud 9, hashtag savings.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Put your name on it. Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or a woman. Put your name on it.
Well, I'd like to hear about it, potheads.
How the fuck you gonna know how to be great if you don't study greatness? Look at the game tape.
Donuts. If
you
wanna battle, it's either
that you will or you won't. Hey, you know, you're not a bad looking man, Mr. Gals.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
There's something wrong with us. Something very, very wrong with us.
Hey, man.
War Stories Podcast. Here we are with the lead singer of Smashing Pumpkins, Billy Corbin. Billy, I got to tell you, I think I'm just going to say it straight out. I think Siamese Dream is probably one of the most underrated albums ever. The sonic sound you created, I got to get that out up front. It's what I run to the most.
I grew my hair out. This isn't a merkin. This is really my
hair
now.
You're Billy Corbin.
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me.
First of all,
redo these
first
notes.
Of all, Corbin got at Billy on Twitter. Was he like an early investor? How did he get at Billy?
Yeah, he got Billy, and then Eliza Schlesinger, who's been on, a comedian, she got at Eliza.
How? Talk about early adopters, man.
I had to put a 37 after my name. The first, J-Moore, one J-Moore, J-Moore 35, J-Moore 36.
But like, it's, so Corgan, but now he wants to be known as William. So I want the at Billy. I want the at Billy handle is what I'm hoping. Yeah, I'm hoping to get.
What's with these guys? They need to, like, why does he need to be at? Why does he need to be known as William? Like, you're Billy Corgan. You got one of the most seminal bands of the 90s. Like, it's the soundtrack of mine and yours of life. Hipsters, give in. It doesn't matter what
up.
You believe.
He's
in.
Grown
Freak
up.
Freak out. Give in.
He's grown
you
up.
Know, who wants some honey? As long as we got that money. Like, he nailed it.
Okay, true story. I did a movie called Limelight, a documentary about Peter Gation, who was the one-eyed, eye-patched, wearing
from
owner
the Limelight.
From the, of the
20th
Limelight.
20th and 6th Avenue, I believe.
Chelsea? 26-ish or 6th Avenue? No, I think you're right. 6th Avenue.
A lot of nights there.
And, well, it's a for people who don't know, it's a
mornings.
Deconsecrated,
church.
Yeah, gothic, historic, yeah. Really creepy but epic kind of church that became it was a drug rehab for a time, actually. It was run by the church as a drug rehab. And then Peter Gation bought it, this Canadian kid, and opened up what became one of the most famous discos of all time. And he owned it for 19 years. It's amazing how famous Studio 54 is, but like Studio 54 was like 2 years. Like, really, it was kind of a flash in the pan. But Limelight was open for 19 years under Peter's ownership before he got tied up in an MDMA trafficking indictment in the Eastern District of New York, as you're wont to do. Well, you've been there, so you might have been 12 at the time. They wouldn't care.
You'd get in. We didn't go there to drink Diet Coke.
Yeah, it was just like, it's Party Monster. You know, they did that doc in that movie with Macaulay Culkin, Michael Alleg and the murder and everything. And so,
and one guy dressed as a giant chicken outside.
Always.
Yeah.
Always. And we premiered it at Tribeca Film Festival and then screened it at Hot Docs in Toronto because Peter was, spoiler alert, later deported back to Canada and was never allowed back in the United States again. And so we go to screen it up in Hot Docs, and Hot Docs is like the festival. It's got like 150 documentaries. So it's like impossible to kind of navigate. But we got in this blog that said like the top 10 docs you should see at Hot Docs, and Limelight was on that list. And I was so psyched because it's like, this helps people obviously break through. Maybe we'll sell some tickets. And it said the documentary directorial debut of Smashing Pumpkins frontman Billy Corgan.
That probably helped you more than if it was Billy Corbin.
So we're
missing a dog here, Corbin. Hold on a second.
Uh-oh.
I don't know. We'll figure it out. Hold on, Corey.
What happened? And they're kind of easy to lose.
They are.
They're quite petite.
Maple. She's right here. She's going to
I feel like I should be live commentating the action. It's like Jay is in the front yard. Mabel, he has eyes on Mabel.
Ready? So, but did more people go see your documentary because you're the lead singer of Smashing Pumpkins?
Probably, which is fine by me. I mean, butts in seats is the goal, right? But what was funny is that I tweeted the woman who wrote it, who was very nice, and I was like, first of all, it's not my documentary directorial debut. Second of all, I'm not Billy Corgan. And she was like, she was so apologetic. She's like, I'm so sorry. I'll change it right away. I'm like, don't apologize for putting our movie on a list of top 10 must-see movies.
Yeah. I wonder if Billy Corgan was it like in Holland doing a Smashing Pumpkin show and looked at his IMDb page and went, man, I must be really hammered. I didn't even know I did this. But it is, in fact, Billy Corbin, who directed Cocaine Cowboys, The U, the 30 for 30 on ESPN about the University of Miami and what a mess they were. New documentary, Dogfight, D-A-W-G, as they say in the hood, I suppose. So, dog?
Or D-O-double-G is the other way they spell it.
That's Snoop style. Yeah. My wife had a great joke about, because Snoop for a while changed his name into Snoop Lion. Remember that?
Yes, of course. Did you do the reggae thing?
Yeah, he went to Jamaica, and they all told him, dog is the lowest form of life. You can't be Snoop Dogg. You're a lion, Rastafari, maximum respect. So he changed it to Snoop Lion, and then he changed it back to Snoop Dogg in like a month. And my wife's theory is that on stage it wasn't really working, like, roar, roar, roar. Roar! Snoop Lion's in the motherfucking house. And all the backup, like, maybe he can learn it, but the backup guys had to learn how to go roar instead of like wow wow wow. Your documentary Dogfight, it's amazing, and everybody gets it at cocainecowboys.com. It's $5. It's the best $5 you'll invest as far as entertainment value goes. And what's amazing is you go to the movies, it's $12-$15. You go watch this laying in bed. You put your laptop on your lap. You go to cocainecowboys.com. It's $5. Look, I put my name on it. That's the code for the listeners, Billy. I have people in here, and they'll promote stuff. And I'm like, that's great, but I never say that magic word. But if I say I put my name on it, they know it's legit. It's real. They'll run. The best way you could support this podcast, my friends, is by using the Amazon banner at jmoore.com. If you're going to shop at Amazon, like you shop at Amazon.
We're Amazon Prime, baby. Are you kidding?
But this is the thing. Don't go there anymore. Go to my website.
And then click.
Click the Amazon banner. Yeah. Then you get redirected to Amazon, and I get a little kickback. It goes right into my son's college fund, direct deposit.
Works for me.
I never see a penny of it.
Works for me.
And I'll email me what you bought at jmoore.com. It's a very interactive website. And I'll read what you bought. Like, how about Marshall Orsini? Hey, Jay, I recently purchased the Asics MatFlex wrestling shoes for my 7-year-old son, Bobby. I'm originally from Millville, New Jersey. That's where my father grew up. So when I moved out here to Iowa about 10 years ago, I was amazed at how serious wrestling was. I knew that if I ever had a son that wanted to wrestle, I would have to get him started young. Bobby is in his second year, and I think he's found his calling. He's 4'4", 62 pounds, and when he meets other kids his age, the first question he asks is, how much do you weigh? Isn't that great? We order quite a few things from Amazon, so from now on, I'm more than happy to go to jmoore.com first. I've been a fan of yours since the 90s. I still remember my older brother retelling your family soap bit. Regards, Marshall W. Orsini, attorney at law. So there you have it, Marshall Orsini. Thank you, brother.
I think I can take his kid. He's in my height class at 4'4". Maybe not my weight class.
Yeah, but you're not as small as you let on. You and your buddy Zach there were like, two short Jews coming into Malibu. Here we come.
I'm a pretty short Jew, man.
How tall are you?
I'm like 5'6". Seven, maybe.
My manager's...
On a good day, my heels.
My manager's Jewish, Barry Katz, and he's actually 6'6", and he's been asked to sign autographs as Dirk Nowitzki. He looks exactly like Dirk Nowitzki.
He's the world's tallest Jew.
And when we were in France promoting Action, the television show Action.
Jared Paul. I grew up with Jared.
He's brilliant.
In elementary school.
I thought he was the next Gene Wilder, and he fell off the face of the earth. I don't know what happened to him.
I don't know where he is these days.
Brilliant. Like Gene Wilder.
I know
Wilder.
His mom, Janet, in Miami. Playing Jewish geography right now. That's what's happening.
That's fine. You got another 4 quarters of where your Jews are at all times.
I don't even see him at the Zionist conspiracy meetings anymore.
Why? Yeah, so you Zionists, you know? If it's one thing, Ahmadinejad, really. No.
Dude, it's not easy doing these documentaries and controlling the world's media and foreign policy at the same time. It's very exhausting.
You're a busy group. Us Catholics, we just sit in a garage and we do podcasts at a card table.
It's true. You should look and get your thetans checked. Look into Scientology. You'll take over the world, dude.
I want to go clear. I want to climb that staircase and go clear. The documentary Dogfight is so phenomenal, so fantastic, and we got to dive into head first. The fact that it's only available online, you pitched it. First of all, you have quite a pedigree. You did you did Cocaine Cowboys. I mean, you're a guy when you walk into a room to pitch a documentary like Dogfight, which is an A+. Like, there's no room for improvement in this documentary about backyard brawling. It's not dogs; it's people. Fist fighting in backyards in Pryor, Florida.
People did think we were doing a 30 for 30 on Michael Vick for a while when they heard the they heard the title.
Fair, yeah. You know what? You would have been on ESPN with the 30 for 30, maybe.
That they would have shown.
Something about black men punching each other scared the shit out of TV executives. Tell me, because you and I spoke on my radio show. Walk us through, the listener. How does this not wind up? Like, you walk it, you got to.
I've been using your lifetime anecdote, too. It's so good.
Yeah, I once pitched a TV show with my friend KP Anderson to Lifetime, and they said, you know what? It's really great. Just a little too Lifetime for us.
I got to tell you, I just, like, there's a groan, off mic groan.
Corey, oh. Was there?
But I don't know how much of this I should, oh, fuck it. All right.
Anything you don't like, we can take out.
I don't care. I'm going to do it. So we're working on this documentary miniseries, limited series, because it's all the rage now after The Jinx on HBO. We were never able to sell like doc miniseries. People wanted either long, you know, like endless serialized, reality shows for a while. That was the docu-soaps, all that shit. But nobody wanted like... We could tell this story in 4 hours or 6 hours, a nonfiction, a doc thing. Now, all of a sudden, because The Jinx, everybody wants their Jinx. You know, after 30 for 30, everybody said, like, oh, we want our 30 for 30. You know, CNN started CNN Films, and everybody started to dabble in feature docs and long-form docs, which was great for our business. But we had some certain stories that, you couldn't contain in 2 hours, so we wanted to we can never – that was part of the story of Dogfight, which I'll get to in a moment. So we're working on this with the network. We get notes from the network. Really excellent notes, actually, on our treatment and our outline of the episodes. No, this is a totally different project. I can't say what it is.
Okay.
So the notes are really solid. I'm replying to the email kind of, note by note, line by line. I'm like, good note. I'll go back when I read it. And I get to the end and they're like, dynamite ending. Really unique, really sensational, really exciting. But, the bar has really been raised by The Jinx. And so... we really need to one up that. And I wrote back like, well,
this is people moving around the house. Yeah.
I said, well, I don't think I can get them to confess to multiple homicides, but I'll do my best. Because spoiler alert, that's how The Jinx ends. So they're like, how do you one up a guy like? But that's the note. The note is to one up a guy confessing to multiple murders at the end of our doc series.
It's in the can.
No, it's not. No, we're just now we're just in the treatment and outline stage. So, but I just like I'm like, how am I supposed to get any better than like a guy confessing to murder in The Jinx? Like, how do you?
He's wearing a mic and he goes into the bathroom. Right. I killed them all. What do you want me to say?
I'm like, I'll do my best, but I don't know that I can deliver on the promise of this other completely different project. But like this just in the world of insane. And we tried like because we shot almost 2 years on Dogfight. And it's, about this subculture in Southwest Miami-Dade of backyard bare knuckle brawls. And so we just kept following these guys to see what would happen. And we saw 3 or 4 guys. Their goal is like the Kimbo Slice, business models. Upload the footage. Get discovered by a pro MMA trainer or promoter and go pro. And so we saw at least 3 or 4 guys go pro right from the backyard and then 2 guys that didn't live that long. And so we had a lot of stories to tell.
Didn't live that long.
Didn't live long enough to go pro or even to see the premiere
like
of the movie.
Died.
Yeah, they died.
They died from fighting?
They did. I'm not going to spoil the whole thing, but they didn't die from fighting. They died violently, though, the both of them.
Well, there's bullets flying all over Perrin.
It's live by the sword, die by the sword, kind of, So I not at the risk of being insensitive about it. That's they come from a kind of a culture of violence and a community of violence.
About it. You're not being insensitive. That's what it is. They say it themselves. And when I watch the movie, they're very open about it. Yeah. What I was going to ask you, when these guys are bare knuckle brawling in a backyard, is the goal? What's the end game? Is the end game for them to get up out of the hood, or is the end game for them to be the baddest motherfucker in the hood?
Yes. I think the answer is yes. I mean, they're certainly fighting for pride. They're certainly fighting for their rep, you know, so people on the streets know that they're badasses. But yeah, and these are guys who come out of prison, many of them. They have, you know, they don't have resumes. They have rap sheets, as Dada 5000 will say in the movie. But, like, they are looking for a way to make, you know, a better life for themselves and their families. And they're not flush with opportunity because by virtue of the fact that they don't necessarily have an education, they have a criminal record, they're deprived of various rights that never get restored to them as convicted felons. And you go to apply for a job, you check that box, you've been convicted of a crime, and it's kind of game over for that gig. So they look for, you know, to live the American dream by any means necessary. And Kimbo became like, the role model, like, oh, I can do what Kimbo did.
And he's a kind man, Kimbo.
Yeah, he badass looking guy. He looks dangerous, yeah, but he's nice.
He's like
yeah.
a really kind guy. Like, he's a sweet guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I would never want to fight him. I wouldn't want to fight anybody, to be honest with you. But, like,
if you can avoid it.
I mean, that lets you know the level of talent in the UFC. If you look at those old Kimbo Slice movies, and basically guys just got him to the ground and got him to tap because it takes a long time to learn how to not get choked out by black belts in jiu-jitsu. Now, Dada 5000. Yeah. He's sort of like the Don King of backyard fighting. Dada 5000, is that his real name?
Oh, yes. That's his nice Jewish man. And Dafir Harris is his given name. And Dada 5000.
How did he settle on 5000?
I don't know how the number came to be.
Dada
makes sense. Dada
2.0.
Yeah, like Dafir to Dada, I get it. But like 5000, I don't know why that number. And I don't know if he'll advance.
Andre 3000.
Yeah, maybe
from
he'll.
Outcast. At he had some to point, one up him. And he's like, you know what? If I do 4000, someone's going to grab 5000. So maybe he just went one up.
And as
what's his Twitter handle?
As Billy Corbin grows up
Dada?
Into William, maybe someday Dada 5000 will grow up to like 7500, maybe.
Yeah. Like depends on how the money rolls into those backyards. So they do want to get out. The reason I ask is because Dada 5000 has that great line in the documentary Dogfight that you all have to buy. You shouldn't. Not like I'm telling you, you should. Like, this is something you have to buy, and that's Dogfight. It's $5 for crying out loud at cocainecowboys.com. Dada 5000 said, if they love you in the ring, they're going to worship you outside the ring. So if I'm living in Perrine and I'm getting worshipped in Perrine, but the American dream takes me outside of Perrine, I get a little setup, little apartment, I get a little beater car, I get a job at Subway, whatever, doing so. All of a sudden, nobody's worshiping me. I'm just some herb going to work every day. So I think that speech Dada 5000 gives, like, if they love you in the ring, they're going to worship you out of the ring. I think that kind of pulls them back. It's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy of staying. The whole point is, I'm making this longer than it should be. The whole point is to get out. But the way Dada 5000 sort of in there, it's almost like a throwaway line, but it's a very motivational speech. It's like, where do you walk down the street in Perrine after you start knocking dudes out?
Well, Dada is nothing if not a motivational speaker. I mean, he's part P.T. Barnum. You said Don King. He's definitely part Don King. He's a mentor. He's a manager. He's certainly the Tony Robbins of the hood. I mean, his speeches and his pontificating and his motivational, he makes pop culture references all the time, like seamlessly. He'll quote Uncle Ben and, you know, in Spider-Man. He'll quote out of nowhere. He's like, you know, he does this whole speech. I wish I could remember the exact. I mean, he's like, you know, to beat me, you have to kill me. And to do that, you have to have the heart. You know, you have to be willing to die yourself. He goes, and I'm like, wait a second. That's Rocky's stairwell speech to Adrian in Rocky IV. And it was verbatim. Like, he just went into it out of nowhere, just like riffing. And all of a sudden, this just like, it's very kind of postmodern and interesting to listen to him talk. And the one thing that does distinguish him, though, from Don King, because Don King comes with a lot of baggage. When you said, so he's the Don King in the backyard.
Stomped. People don't realize Don King stomped a man to death.
To death.
Stomped.
To death.
A man to death. Yeah, he's a convicted murderer.
Yes.
All right. But it didn't
stomped.
Hold him back.
Yeah, but no, only in America.
Anybody out there listening, you're like, you know what? I feel like stomping my neighbor to death, but I don't want to not get ahead in life. Just look at Don King. Yeah. Just stomp that
He's
dude,
a role
man.
Model. He really is.
But, for people stomping.
But he's also notorious, you know, has a reputation for taking advantage of his fighters. And that's the one thing
that
distinguishes him from Dada is that Dada, and I don't know that he wanted us to know this, but his mom, whose backyard it is, whose house, you know, whose property they hold these illegal, unsanctioned backyard brawl events in a 12 by 12 ring that Dada and his brother built. She revealed that in all the years that he did the organized backyard fights. And it's funny about organized backyard fights, as I said, they're illegal and unsanctioned, but he puts a card together and weighs the guys in his mom's broken bathroom scale. And she revealed that he never got a penny, never made a penny. He collects money at the gate, and 100% of that revenue, $20 a head, $50 for VIP chairs, which consist of plastic folding chairs around the 12 by 12 ring.
Well, hold on.
All the money went to the...
Say that again. VIP what?
Well, it's $20 a head because she's got a chain link fence around the house.
Naturally.
So they put a blue tarp up, which alerts the neighborhood. It's going down. You know, if you see the blue tarp, Saturday afternoon, the fight's
that's
happening.
The commercial.
That's the signal. You know, okay. that's the flare. And
so it's $20 to get in.
Ahead. People who can't afford it will climb up trees in the neighbors' yards and watch down into the yard to see the fights. But there is $50 VIP. There's only like 20 or so of those. It's their plastic folding chairs just right around the 12 by 12 ring. 12 by 12 is really small, by the way,
you're probably
too.
Covered in blood if you're sitting in those seats.
Everybody around the ring. My cameras were covered in blood. And some of these guys, it looks big when you're like, you come into an empty yard, but once you put two fighters and then Dada, who's a big dude,
100 viewers,
it shrinks. And some of these guys, their wingspan alone is like half the length of the ring. They start throwing fists, and it's like two helicopters, you know, like next to it got really crazy.
But Dada,
crazy.
If he doesn't make a penny, does he make his money?
100% of that gate revenue went to the purses for the fighters. As much as 400, as little as 200, and he always tries to give money to the losers too. As much as 50, as little as 20, depending on the gate, obviously, you know, what the attendance was. And volume, I don't know. I mean,
Dada pay his car note? Where does he make his money?
He saw it as he was building a resume for himself, and he's now gone legit because he went to a crawl, because he's living
he's
sequel
now.
He went pro, spoiler alert, but now he's started his own. But he started his own legit fighting
academy.
It's called BYB Backyard Brawls, and he like legitimized the operation. It's a league, really. It's a fight league, and he is training fighters now properly. Because some of these guys, I mean, they just let's face it. I mean, they were brawlers. You know, they came in and threw fists at each other, and it was, you know, and I saw some trained guys go in there and just put much bigger, badder looking guys to sleep, literally. To sleep because they just knew what the hell they were doing. But he's now trying to train them. There'll be medical care. There's no doctors or ambulances or anything at these fights. And the scariest thing is that nobody is checked up. There's no exams like pre-fight. So pre-existing conditions, you know, if a guy has something that might exacerbate, you know, the damage or the blows, you have no idea.
I'm going to ask you why this is illegal. I don't understand why it is. And we got to get into your network notes. And
oh, yeah. I skipped
that. It's amazing to me that no network took this movie, Dogfight. But you, my friends, because you're listening to More Stories, you can get it for $5 at cocainecowboys.com. But we got to give a little love to our sponsors. That's what keeps the mics on. Listen to this first.
Squarespace, easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, incredible 24/7 customer support. You got a problem, they're going to help you. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com. Enter my offer code MORE, M-O-H-R, at checkout. Get 10% off. Simple, powerful, beautiful, 24/7 support via live chat and email. Here's the thing. It's only $8 a month, and you get a free domain if you buy Squarespace for the year. It could be anything. Make up something cockamamie and crazy. They don't care. It's a good place to be. Squarespace. Responsive design. Your website scales to look great on any device. Commerce. Every website comes with a free online store. I don't know if you've been to jmoore.com. I sell t-shirts. Guess who I used? Squarespace Cover Pages, a feature that allows you to set up a beautiful one-page online presence in minutes. Start a trial with no credit card required and start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, Make sure to use the offer code MORE, M-O-H-R, to get 10% off your first purchase and to show your support of this podcast. We thank Squarespace for their support of the More Stories podcast. Squarespace, build it beautiful.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
Sip of the orange Gatorade. You're not a sponsor. I'm taking a sip of the orange Gatorade because that's what hitters drink, man.
Go. Go Gators. Mm. Go Gators. Go Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah.
Gator for life without parole.
He finally got a guaranteed lifetime contract.
Oh, too soon.
So, fuck him.
Yeah. Everybody said, you're going to do a 30 for 30? I'm like, I think he's going to get 30 to life before I do a 30 for 30 on Aaron Hernandez.
They're lined up 30 behind him. That's a prize. That's a trophy.
Oh, no.
Anyway, I'm not even going to go there. Here's... How
you
many
did.
Network,
you already did.
No. How many networks did you bring this to? I would assume HBO and Showtime are the first two, like, hey, I'm Billy Corbin. I did Cocaine Cowboys. They know me. They know I don't ever hand in anything that's not great. And this is probably, I'm going to say this is your best work. I think it's
Thank
your best
you.
Work that you've ever done.
Thank
Dog you. Dogfight, DAWG-FIGHT. But go to cocainecowboys.com to buy it for $5. Was Showtime and HBO, were those your first two stops?
We went to everybody, man.
But who were your first? What was the one we were like?
I honestly don't remember.
Oh, was that
like
many?
The order? Yeah, we went to everybody.
Give me a number
thought around
about. How many networks would you guess?
At least six, at least.
Now, to the listener, they're like, well, that ain't shit, six. But you have to understand.
There's only so many places.
Yeah, I've pitched a lot of shows, sold one.
Yeah.
Two, I should say. And what you don't realize to the casual listener that's, you know, just got earbuds in right now, when you pitch a show, you're going in with, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Billy Corbin, you're going in with a master's degree from Harvard, and you're saying, I can bring you the most beautiful thing that's popping. And literally, community college people are telling you, you know what? Could you make it a little more like the Jinx? Like, and so anytime you get rejected, a piece of your soul just leaves your body, because the only reason you're in the room to pitch the show is because you are certain this is such a great fit for this place. They are lucky I'm even taking this meeting, and then they cut your goddamn legs off, right? Well, is that accurate?
Needless to say, we didn't pitch this to Lifetime, for example, because you want to go into a room that you're thinking there is at least a prayer that this would be appropriate, or they might be looking for something like this.
Logo. Certain, very homoerotic.
Not a bra. It is
strong,
actually.
Strong black men, shirtless, sweaty, in a 12x12 ring. You're not a bad-looking man, Mr. Garrison.
Shit. I got nothing but time, Mr. Garrison. Days, months,
you
years.
Don't know nothing, Mr. Garrison, because you've never been fucked in your ass. Quoting JFK now. This is great. You're my kind of guy.
Mr. Gasson. No, we by the way, I think
underrated Kevin Bacon performance.
I think we fucked up. We should have gone to Logo, dude. Where were you when we needed proper representation?
It's not too late to
cut. We should have gone.
It's not too late to cut us in.
We should have gone to Logo. How to describe this process? It's so completely archaic too, because very often you are, I mean, yeah, you have certain gatekeepers. I mean, when we first got into this racket, we were like, it was the last gasp of the film festival kind of boom, you know, like the Soderbergh kind of era of, like, you know, you go to Sundance, you make a splash, because our first movie went to Sundance in 2001. But that ship had...
What was your first movie?
Raw Deal, A Question of Consent. It was about the alleged rape of a stripper at a frat house at UF, at University of Florida in Gainesville, that was all caught on videotape. And we used the video footage and interviewed the frat men and the stripper. If you've not seen this, I'll send this to you.
No,
you have
to
see this.
Do, yeah.
I think it's our first work. I think it's some of our best work, second only to Dogfight, of course. But it's
Dogfight blew my mind, like, straight up. So we're talking about pitching shows. I don't want to.
So talk. I mean, there's so many different ways to go with this, because we've been developing. First of all, I think it's more soul crushing for you because you live here. That's why I live in Miami Beach. Because, like, I come here and I turn into, like, Philip Marlowe. Like, my inner monologue is like Los Angeles, where tears come out of the faucets and broken hearts run the power grid. Like, I get all kinds of, like, the other day we're coming out of a meeting and the receptionist is like, do you guys need validation? And I'm like, this is Los Angeles. We're all looking for validation, dude. Like, I just get really, like, solemn here. And this town's been, like, terribly good to me my whole life. And I just, but for some reason I land and I suddenly just like, I just hear hearts just breaking. I just, and
well, it's a heartbreak town.
Yeah. And it's like the
some of us stick it out and some of us put our tails between our legs and go back to Miami.
Fucking survivor, dude. You're a fucking survivor. When I was a kid, I did a pilot every single year. Can't do more than one pilot because, you know, they got you on lock if they pick up this piece of shit. And so like, I did a pilot you do your guest spots, you do a feature if you can or two.
Wacky
and then.
Neighbor, husband and wife, can't stand each other.
I was the best friend or the little brother. Yeah. I wasn't like, you know, leading man material, so I was always the white Jewish Urkel. Yeah. You know, that was me.
Did I?
Urkel. I don't know. Yeah, like that was, I had the suspenders on. You know, like that was the knee-high socks or whatever. And so
it was an Ant.
Every year.
I don't happily ever after, he was Ant.
I missed that reference. Kevin Bacon and JFK, I got.
My
that
wife
one
was on a show on Happily Ever After, and the guy you're describing was played by a guy named Ant.
If I...
Who one day... I need permission to tell that story.
Right, so it's a permission form.
Pitching shows.
Yeah, pitching shows.
Pitching dog fights.
Pitching dog fight. Okay. All right.
You have an Academy Award-winning documentary in your hands.
Wrong, obviously.
If I made this, I'd be like, I'm actually going to the Oscars. I mean, dogfight is that.
I don't know. I don't think that way because we call our
genre.
I'm
just saying when you pitch.
I know. That's
you
like
realize it's that good. That's the only reason you agree to the pitch. And do you agree with me that you are overqualified in the room you're going into for the pitch? And they would be very lucky to have this project. That's always been my mindset. Maybe that's why a lot of people in this town don't like me.
I don't immediately presume I'm the smartest guy in the room.
Oh,
I didn't
not the
mean
smartest.
To
just
rhyme
the work.
There, but
the work, like the script is so great. All right.
Here's the bottom line. If you have the ability and you have the ability, and I do now in like the nonfiction universe, have the ability to get a meeting, which some people in this town would fucking kill their mother for. Sorry, mom. But if you can get in the room, you're goddamn right.
She's had a long life. don't even worry about it.
I don't know that you should sacrifice her for a lifetime pitch, but all the same, especially if it's two lifetime. But like, if you're absolutely right that if you're gonna get in the room, and because I don't look a gift horse in the mouth, I don't take for granted that I'm always gonna be able to get in the room and pitch something. You better feel damn strong that what you're bringing to the table is badass enough to sell.
Let me circle you back to the pin that I'm focusing.
Yeah.
We're pitching dogfight.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an Academy-worthy documentary. So you go in and you pitch to who? Who was first?
I'm a little bit more pragmatic about it because I don't sell Oscar. I sell people are going to watch. I sell eyeballs. We call our genre pop docs because they don't tend to be like the socially conscious Holocaust and civil rights kind of docs that get nominated for Oscars. But people see them is the most important thing. You know, people see Cocaine Cowboys. People see Broke and The U. And some of them are better than others, but people watch them. We've helped, I think, to usher in kind of a new or a younger demographic or generation to long-form nonfiction that might not have necessarily, you know, watched documentaries or talking head things in the past, you know? And so I go in not just with, like, you're going to win awards, but, like, people are going to watch this. I'm telling you, I don't live in Los Angeles, which is a fucking vacuum of ideas. How else to describe in our lifetimes two Robin Hood movies in the same year, two Volcano movies, two Christopher Columbus movies, two Truman Capote movies, because Truman Capote was hot. Like that. How about two White House Under Siege movies just like a year or two ago, two Asteroid Hurtling Towards the Earth movies? Because it's like this, it's like one studio greenlights it and another studio goes, oh shit, volcanoes are hot. Don't we have a volcano script? And they blow the dust off of it. And then no one asks the audience, are you interested in one volcano movie, let alone two volcano movies? But now you have two big studios spending, you know, half the GNP of Tunisia to put out two movies that nobody has any interest in seeing because people between Burbank and Beverly Hills decided that, you know, Truman Capote's hot this year or Christopher Columbus is hot this year. Like, it doesn't make any sense. We tried to pitch Cocaine Cowboys and nobody would buy it. We came back from Sundance Film Festival. Our little movie, our doc that we hit the road, went to Gainesville and did, is on the front page of the New York Post out of Park City, Utah. Rape, Lies, and Videotape, Sundance Shocker. They anoint us the bells of the Sundance Ball. We think, shit, we've arrived. This is badass. It must have been the altitude in Park City where every drink is like two. I'd never been to Sundance before. I'd never really been that high before. And we can get all the meetings now because everybody knows who we are. Oh, my God. Yeah. They flew me out. This management company flew me out right from Sundance to L.A. They put me up at the Chateau Marmont. I was like, holy shit, I'm having milk and cookies. This is awesome. What I come in, they check me in. They're very nice, but kind of, you know, just like sort of typical, you know, front desk shit. The next day, the bidding war story is in Variety. I shit you not, I walk into the lobby of the Chateau Marmont. The front desk guy who I'd seen, who'd been very friendly but kind of passive, and it was like, Mr. Corbin. Mr. Corbin, welcome back to the Chateau. Congratulations on your Sundance movie. I love the front desk guy was reading the trades, you know.
That's
and
LA, the so guy that works the front desk.
It's a factory town, dude. That's why it's depressing. So long story even longer, I'm like, we can get these meetings now. We're going to everybody. And in those days, our audience was like eight people. Those are like the execs at the specialty or documentary, you know, distribution companies. That was it. We had no ability in those days to go right to audience. You know, that was just an immediately post-Napster, pre-YouTube kind of world, you know. We knew it was coming because we saw what was happening to the Postal Service and print. Then we saw what was happening to music as this, you know, the speeds got faster. And we knew it was only a matter of time before it was going to affect what we were trying to do. But in the meantime, we were out there pitching our wares. Like, we're the Raw Deal Question of Consent guys. Oh, my God, I heard that was amazing at Sundance. I haven't seen it yet. When's it going? And Cocaine Cowboys was our idea. The real Miami Vice. The real Scarface. And everybody's like, didn't we see this with Blow? I'm like, well, no, this is a doc. It's like, yeah, but, like, isn't this just, like, Scarface or Miami Vice? We're like, well, no, it's, well, how many mafia movies are you? How many
untouched
Al Capone? Yeah, like,
this
people didn't
real,
get it.
Spans two decades.
And this was a calculation for us because we wanted to. Sundance was awesome, but like, you
didn't
can't.
We already see this with Blow. Yeah.
I'm serious. That's this is like crazy
no,
shit.
I know, it's just
we're, and I realized.
I can picture the face, the smug face.
And I was like, how many Al Capone stories are you going to do? How many why do The Sopranos if you've already done Goodfellas? Like, you don't know there's different stories to tell about Miami in the 80s. And
what were some of the notes you got on Dogfight that to this day you're scratching your head?
Too urban.
All right, let's go blow by blow here, okay?
Which we all know what that means. Too Jewish.
Black. Too black. Too black. Urban. So
too urban.
You have a documentary called Dogfight.
Yes.
Which you can get on Cocaine Cowboys for $5. Which is about black men. In a backyard.
Mostly, primarily, yeah.
Fighting.
Urban subculture. Yes.
Yeah. You're speaking in codes now as well. So it'd be like if I went, like, it'd be like pitching Hoop Dreams and they're saying it's too urban. It's like, no, it's two black guys and their journey. This is a backyard filled with black people, predominantly. Mm-hmm. So the note you get is that it's too urban, to which you probably want to flip a table over and go, they're fucking black.
I'm reliving this, I kind of feel like I'm back there.
Okay.
I want to flip this table over.
Yeah, it's heavy.
It looks heavy. Yeah.
A lot of conversations at this table, man. You're flipping Henry Rollins and Perry Farrell over with it, and Damian Eccles go.
Tables could talk. Damian Eccles.
What was another?
Jesse Miskelly.
What was another note you got? Too urban is astounding. So you're pitching a documentary about backyard fighting, with many, many, many 99.9% black people in it, and the note is too urban.
Urban.
Which, by the way, I will say, that's a detriment to the people in the documentary. Like, we don't feel like that. That rubs me.
Like, urban stories are not worth telling or not.
Yeah, because it's an important story. And it's like, what do you mean it's too urban? Like, these are black. These are human beings, and we filmed them over 2 years fighting and going to the ER with brain trauma.
And what's ridiculous is that this is pre-Empire. And what's incredible to me is to watch the shock and awe of people in the entertainment industry that people want to watch stories about black people. Like, how is that shocking to anybody? You know, that like, you know, that like a black dynasty, you know, would be a hit. Like, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Oh,
like,
where were you when it was, I think it was the Brooks Whelan podcast. My wife had me and Brooks Whelan from Saturday Night Live play the game. She calls it the whizification of Hollywood. Everything eventually becomes the black version, like the
Black Airplane with Soul Plane.
Yeah.
They did the Black Honeymooners.
Annie was black.
Annie, black
Honeymooners.
Annie, yeah.
And then it was
the
like
Wizification. That's
Black
brilliant.
Annie Hall. Like, you're what Mommy Hall would call a real black. Like, we were like racking our brains. And Brooks Whelan's like wicked, like sharp and funny. We came up with some, and I asked people, I tweeted people, like, The Wizification, like, what's the best, worst white movie to be remade in black? The Wizification of it.
Black Annie Hall is pretty amazing. It doesn't get any whiter and waspier and like it has, like,
you
know. You
put the lobster in the pot? I mean, who's afraid of lobsters?
Oh, it's terrific ham. It's delicious terrific. Ham.
Well, you know, Max. So you were told too urban. What's another note they told you?
Too violent.
Okay. So, Jesus Christ. I'm reliving it now with you. It's a movie about fighting. They took a movie. Yeah. The fight is in the title. And the network and the people at the network said it's too violent.
Yes.
But stay tuned for Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather Jr.
Yes. And
look, Django Unchained.
Yeah. Great movie.
Had black men, slaves.
Yes.
These men in your documentary are fighting on their own volition, and they're getting paid by Dada 5050.
We've danced
Django,
him.
And Django, and we will throughout the podcast, and Django Unchained,
yes.
We are watching fictionalized, not real life, we're watching fictionalized Quentin Tarantino writes pen to paper, and there are slaves fighting, but the fight's not over, and you're not going to get your meal, boy, unless you gouge out his eye with your thumb, and it's cool. You watch Jackass, Johnny Knoxville, what him and those loons are doing is way more dangerous than what these guys are doing. They stand there blindfolded and let alligators take shots at their nuts because there's meat in their underwear.
It's just good television.
Really, if you wanted to sell Dogfight, you just needed a white guy dressed as a Southern dandy with a cigarette holder. Well, you needed Leonardo DiCaprio in the corner saying, he's a fine fighter.
Well, or you needed Quentin Tarantino. Here's the thing about that. You really want to get into it. You used the word scared earlier. It scared people. Here's my theory about this.
In Parine, scared.
Scared. You're scared. And
don't get scared.
Well, my third, and this will take us to this point, my third favorite or least favorite comment was too real. So too urban, too violent, and too real. And
which I would assume, okay, this is my point.
Mm.
Why I brought the point up.
Mm.
That's why you're bringing it to them. Because it's so black. It's so violent, and it's so real. This is a must-see. Well, and they use those things against you. And
yes.
Like, what do you want me to do? Like, just get 10 fake white fighters and, like make them the stars of it?
I went through, like, the stages of grief. And then
Jamie Kennedy taking on Dada 5000.
Speaking of good television, can we get the alligators involved in there, too? Sure. How do we?
He brings
Jackass. I go through
not
the seven
a knock
stages.
On Jamie Kennedy, by the way.
Not at all. I go through the seven stages of grief, and when I get to acceptance, I'm like emboldened. I realize like this is like a woman rejecting you with, you know what? You're too tall, too handsome, and too big down there. By the way, none of which I've ever heard from a woman before. But like
yet,
but yet,
you gotta go to the Learning Channel and hang out with all those little ladies. That's what I've learned from the Learning Channel.
It's TLC now.
There are more
rebranded,
midgets on the Learning Channel than there are midgets.
Yeah. Midgets with quintuplets who bake wedding cakes or whatever the hell whatever the hell it is. So
you're being told by an ugly woman that you're too hot, too tall, and your dick's
too
big.
But like it was ultimately rejection that emboldened us, I think. Because you say too urban, too violent, too real. I'm like, oh, you just described everything Americans love or everything everybody, like pop culture. Like you described UFC, boxing, you've described football, you've described basketball. Let's get into what I was trying to get into before because what you scurred because.
Get scared.
The NFL is almost 70%. Black, the players. The NBA is almost 80% African American.
They look black.
Look, they do. Look at the owners of the teams.
Yeah, white billionaires.
Look at the heads of the leagues.
Yeah.
Look at Quentin Tarantino, who made a brilliant movie, I think, in Django.
Yes.
But it's urban culture filtered for mass market or filtered for America. So you need David Stern to tell the guys, you know, pick up your pants and, you know, this is how you should not only behave on the court, but this is how you should dress.
You got to wear suits on the bus.
Off the court. Yeah. This is, you know, you have, you know, Roger Goodell, you have the benevolent, you know, NCAA bestowing the gift of education on the upon the inner city in exchange for their blood, brains and bones. You know, to play college football, but it's all under the guise of academia, you know, and this is the dogfight is urban culture, unfiltered, uncensored, completely Dada is the Roger Goodell of the operation.
Dada 5080.
Dada 5085 and a half is the Roger Goodell of the operation. It is an urban subculture. Completely without, I mean, if you want to include me as being the sort of the conduit, but in a nonfiction world, it's like, I'm sort of like, I'm not really a filter. I'm just kind of, you know, a messenger really. So like, it's just, I get it. It's too urban because, you know, Donald Sterling doesn't own the team. You know, it's too urban because David Stern isn't there to tell these guys how to behave. It's too urban because Mark Emmert isn't there to remind everyone that it's really about education.
So my wife was right. If you had Leonardo DiCaprio in the corners with a cigarette holder dressed as a dandy, you probably would have sold it a lot sooner.
Boom. Done. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's why she's my better half.
She's absolutely. Where the hell was she when we were trying to sell this damn thing?
I'm telling you, next thing you do, you got to cut us in. Let me. You want to hear one of my, another great pitch? Because you like my Lifetime one.
I'm gonna get so angry.
This is the one that made me stop pitching shows. It was about a 4-year hiatus before from when I pitched this show to Last Comic Standing was about a 4-year. I can't do this. It kills me. It's too. I can't. And as a comic, you're wired for yes. You know, you go on stage. Yes, they tell you yes. How's everybody doing? They cheer. Please welcome. They applaud. Yes. Yes.
If one thing doesn't work, you keep going until you get the yes.
And in an hour and a half, it's an hour and a half of your, we love you, you're great, we bought tickets months ago, can't wait to see you, can't wait for the meet and greet, yada, yada. We're wired for yes. So when you pitch a show and they tell you no, you just sit there going, wait, how? So the meeting's over? Like, I don't understand. Well, hold on a second. What do you mean? And the meeting's over. And you can't, it's not like a stand-up bit where you can go like, all right, but I'm gonna do something else, and I'm gonna
win them back. Yeah,
I'm gonna call back to it, and they're gonna realize they really miss it the first time because I know it's funny, right?
That's badass.
I can't close with walking in a pitch meeting. I can't go. But wait, there's more. Yeah, you didn't hear the rest of the pitch. Leonardo DiCaprio and Steve-O, they're in the corner of the ring, and they're shooting bowling balls at each other's crotch. It's crazy. It's not too urban. It's urban enough. You got it all mixed up. I pitched a show. A friend of mine had this idea. Three brothers, okay? One's black, one's white, different parents, obviously. And the third is, I believe the term is, I don't know if mulatto is a slur. If it is, I'm apologizing because that's just what I always know. Half white, half black, mulatto.
I think that's mixed. Okay. Zebra, I don't know. I think that's
yeah,
okay.
You get it worse. Octoroon. So,
gender illusionist. I don't know what they. Pigmentation illusionist. I don't know how to.
The black brother and a white brother, and they always fight. Okay, they're brothers. Like, but they had a different.
You mean I'm gonna stay this color?
So, but they don't fight over race ever because they're brothers. You know, they're like they're half brothers. You know, right. They had the same dad or different mom or whatever. And one's a Republican, one's a Democrat. It's like one's like Fraser Crane, and the other one, or the black guy could be the Republican, the white guy. You know, you mix it up.
Even funnier.
The mulatto kid, like picture like a Mario Lopez type looking cat. He's half white. I know he's not, but just that's who you would cast. Mario Lopez type. He's half from the parents of the half of these two guys. He goes off to college. The two brothers are afraid that he's not ready for the big city. So they get an apartment in the city to keep an eye on the little brother. The little brother winds up having to keep an eye on the two older guys because all they do is fight all the time. So you got black, white. You got half and half. And it was being pitched to UPN, which had just become an all-black network. Yeah. This is...
The U was for urban in UPN.
This,
yeah.
It's an alley-oop. I'm DeAndre Jordan. I got the ball in my hands. This is
show,
so easy. And they told us emphatically, not what we're looking for. And I'm like, hold on. And it was one of those meetings where you just dig your heels and you go, hold on a minute. And I pitch it again. I go, there's a one child's black. the other child's white. So you have a white audience and a black audience already. And then the other child is of mixed race. So you have that. There's nobody being represented on television of mixed race. And they fight, but they don't fight over race. So the message is so empowering. And they're like, no. I'm like, you're not letting me finish. Like, I won't stop. Corey was there. Look at her. Look at her. This shit goes on. Look at me, Billy. This shit goes on for an hour and a half.
No, like they are 90 minutes.
Am I wrong? They are wiping their brows with handkerchiefs in suits.
You were there?
Yeah, Corey was going to be one of the producers on it. So finally, after an hour and a half, it's me, Corey, Barry Katz, my manager, and Barry goes, okay, and we all get up, and I'm just like, what the fuck? I don't know. I open the door to the president of UPN's office. Floor-to-ceiling billboard poster, Homeboys in Outer Space. And I said, I am never pitching a show again. And it was on, like, season 5, Homeboys. Remember that show? Homeboys
mercifully,
in Outer Space.
I don't remember. I remember the title. Mercifully remember not a thing about that show.
I think it was
show.
A big launch, like, season 3. And it was all, like, but in their own building, they had a mural, Homeboys in Outer Space. Like, after I just got my teeth kicked in, no. And I'm like, no, you don't understand how good this is for you, UPN. Homeboys in Outer Space. And I said, I'm not doing this anymore.
That's me. And you walked away for like 4 years?
Yeah. I pitched Last Comic Standing, sold it. And then I pitched something. We'll talk off mic because you might be interested in it, actually. Documentary thing.
That is devastating.
Documentary
that story
series.
Is
you might be very interested in
it. I love. Yeah. I'm all about it. Documentary series.
And I don't waste your time about it either. It's if you think of it, it's because you think it's a great thing.
Right.
Absolutely. Dog fight. Why is fighting in backyards against the law?
I don't know the
Everybody's
answer to
willing.
That. I'm sorry. I do know the answer to that. It's because the white man ain't getting any money from it. You need to get sanctioned. You need to pay the state. You need to hire referees. You need to bring in the Florida Boxing Commission. That's what it is. It's a system that
they're all so they're all so full of shit because all they want to do is preach to white America how the drug epidemic is killing the inner cities of our country. Now you got guys that figured out a way to make maybe $400 over a weekend without slinging cocaine on a street corner, and you won't let them do it.
And without hurting anybody else other than another guy willing to get in that ring.
Who thinks he's going to be the guy hurting the other guy.
Absolutely, yeah.
So they're not dealing drugs. They're not slinging cane.
Yeah.
They're not doing, no yayo. I saw cocaine cowboys.
Flake.
They're not stepping on it.
White lobster.
White lobster.
That's when it was floating. That's when they found it floating.
White lobster?
Yeah, it was white
lobster.
It's
right next to red lobster. Yeah. can't get reservations at red lobster. Go to white lobster. So it's against the law basically because the state of Florida, whoever.
The state anywhere.
They're not getting their cut.
You know, government won't let you make a dime unless you pay them a quarter. You know, so that's kind of the philosophy.
So this podcast is legal because when I do my taxes, if I get any revenue from the podcast, which is minimal, I have to pay taxes. That's why nobody gets in my shit about doing a podcast.
Absolutely. You're paying your way. You're doing your part. It's all legit. It's been certified. It's been sanctioned. It's been all of this. You're paying your and I'll tell you, fight promoters certainly want to crack down on these events because these guys are doing it quote unquote the right way. They're paying all this overhead to put on a legit sanctioned event, and Dada comes in and just throws up a 12 by 12 ring in his mom's backyard, and the next thing you know, people are out there. The only illegal shit I saw really going down, people were smoking weed, which is miraculously still illegal in the state of Florida, despite it being the biggest cash crop other than citrus in the state of Florida.
And by the way, state of Florida, I go once a year, and I've never seen a drunker state in my life. It is, everybody's
drunk,
just drunk.
Yeah.
You go walk the dogs, you're like, I gotta go back to my
hotel. Tan, beautiful, ripped people, no livers. None. Just little black holy liver, like
liverless.
Nothing. Just gone, dead.
Not lily livered.
No. They're Uber is illegal. It's like that's what we need. Everybody in Miami should be driving. Is what they should be. They should
Uber's
be drunk
illegal
and
in Miami?
Drive. Uber is illegal in the state of Florida.
Oh, that's what I meant. Yeah,
yeah, all of it. Yeah, in Miami and everywhere. They're trying
Now we know why Florida's shaped like a penis.
It's just unbelievable. It's
Making
so
Tallahassee
sad.
The taint.
Yeah. Florida fuckery is just nonstop. Nonstop Florida fuckery.
So you...
Tallahassee's the taint.
Is there a part of you, Billy Corbin, director of Dogfight, that when you sell this online at cocainecowboys.com for $5...
What was that site again?
Cocaine Cowboys. And there's an E at the end of cocaine, dummies. just because you're high on it doesn't mean you can't spell it out. Long hang. Yeah.
Not an E at the end of heroin, though.
Heroin. Yeah, is there heroin. A part of you, Billy Corbin, when you are now selling what I think will be nominated for an Oscar documentary?
When I don't think there's an online category at the Academy Awards.
Maybe
I think
you
we
get
blew
distribution
it. By...
If it explodes enough on the internet, maybe you find a distributor. Is there a part of you that dies inside when you go, I'm selling this online? What happened? I spent 2 years of my life. I put together a great move. Yeah. What? Really?
Yeah. All in.
5 years of your life and you're selling it online. That's
on our own time and our own dime.
That's a dollar a year.
That's in this business, that's good money.
Does a part of you, it's got to be soul crushing.
Nope.
Why?
I love it.
Why?
I fucking love it.
Because of the pirate ship aspect of it?
I love it because we couldn't do this when we started. We couldn't say, fuck everybody. I'm just going to go to the audience that I know exists for this. When we pitched Cocaine Cowboys, we weren't going in the room like, we think this is a cool story. We went in the way you were talking about. We had just had this smash at Sundance. We thought we were the cock of the walk, and we were going to be like, this is the next big thing.
Yeah,
but it was a calculation. It was
Your resume speaks for itself. Billy Corbin walks into a room, you're getting one of the premier documentary filmmakers of my generation, certainly.
Thank you. And you hope I'm pitching you something decent.
I'm not
decent.
Watching your balls. I mean, it's fucking just the you, Broke, and Cocaine Cowboys and Dogfight. I'm like, holy shit, this guy can make documentaries. Oh,
thank you. And I thought so too until I went in the room, you know? The homeboys in outer space I don't have.
If only UPN was still around.
Or Urban Paramount Network, we would
have sold.
But we just... So Cocaine Cowboys, it's the same thing with Dogfight. We went in there, it was a calculate. We're like, we're not here with a cool story. We're here with a great story. Because I say the job of the filmmaker is to find a good story and then don't fuck it up. Or tell it well would be the PG version. Find a good story and then tell it well. And, you know, just stay out of its way. And if it's already a good story, then it's up to you to, you know, to not screw it up. So we came in, we said, the biggest selling video game of all time right now. Meaning the moment we were pitching Cocaine Cowboys, Grand Theft Auto Vice City, which is all things 80s Miami. Yeah. Michael Mann had just announced that he was doing the Miami Vice movie. It wasn't NBC at the time. It was Universal Home Video released the 20th anniversary edition of Scarface on DVD along with Def Jam Records, which outsold Jurassic Park and E.T. on DVD, like combined for Universal Home Video. We're like, the 20-year nostalgia cycle.
Could not be more perfect. Yeah,
the 20-year nostalgia cycle was up. We're like, for Miami 80s, and we wanted to do... So we came in with like this whole pitch of like, this is not only a great story, and we have the access to tell it and the style to do it in, and the pedigree of being Sundance documentarians, but... This is a moment in time where marketing-wise, this is just unbeatable. You only need to watch one episode of Cribs to know where Scarface stood in the pantheon of pop culture or youth culture in the hip-hop realm. And nobody, nothing, nothing. Crickets, closed doors, slam doors, nothing, nobody. I mean, just they did not get it at all. But that was it. We had to go out and raise the money, pound the pavement. We got the money. You know, we got an angel. We were able to do a reel, get the rest of the money together.
What's an angel? What do you
mean? An angel investor, someone who believed in us, was a wealthy person who was a friend of the family, who was like, this sounds cool. I'm going to give you guys some seed money, you know, startup capital. And then we cut a reel together, got the rest of the money to finish it, and then went to the Tribeca Film Festival with it. And Magnolia Pictures, Mark Cuban's company, they saw it at Tribeca. And within months, we had a deal. But like... We couldn't just put it on the internet and ask the audience to give us $5. There wasn't an opportunity like that then. But an interesting thing did happen. In the summer of 06, so Tribeca was like in April of 06. In the summer of 06, we're prepping it for theatrical release. In those days, that still meant going to like a laboratory, striking a print, an actual film print of a movie that we shot on video to begin with. Oh, yeah. So the expense of and then they had to print traffic to the 13 major markets that it was going to open theatrically in, and all this shit. And we're spending all this money, Magnolia is, that gets billed to us, you know, as far as, you know, back end on the movie. And one of the guys that works for us goes to a barbershop in the hood to get his haircut in Miami Gardens. And it's a storefront barbershop, you know, narrow but really long. And they have two TVs mounted on either side. And he goes in. This is 3-4 months before the theatrical release of Cocaine Cowboys. What's on the TV? Cocaine Cowboys. It's playing on their DVD player. He says, where'd you get this? They're like, Cocaine Cowboys? We love this shit. We come in the morning, 7 a.m., we turn this shit on, and we watch it on a loop all day, every day. I know my favorite characters, my favorite lines. We got it at the Flea, the Carroll City Flea Market. We go there to the bootleg table. You got these two characters, these young kids, one of which had like a trachea, one of those things where he talked like this. And we're like, Cocaine Cowboys, you got that? Oh, yeah, we got that. We've sold 5,000-10,000 units of it already on DVD-R, you know, with black Sharpie written Cocaine Cowboys on it. It was such a popular title at the Flea. They were selling Cocaine Cowboys 2, which we wouldn't make for another 2 years. There was another DVD-R with Sharpie written Cocaine Cowboys 2. What was it? We bought it for $5 to see what the hell it was. It was an MSNBC documentary about killing Pablo Escobar. that they just repurposed because Cocaine Cowboys was such a hot bootleg title that they wanted to keep, you know, you get 2 for $7. So you get Cocaine Cowboys 1 and the fake Cocaine Cowboys 2. And we're like, what the fuck are we going to do about this? The movie's not even out. This was summer. Movie's not even out in theaters till October, not out on DVD till January. And so we were in the midst of doing this this web series, and we had like crews out in the field, and they do half days. So we said during one of the half days, we had seen what happened with the RIAA, you know, suing fans of music. Like basically, like, we're gonna sue our fans, and that's how we're gonna save our business model. And we said, these, you know, the people who are bootlegging this are our fans. You don't bootleg shit. You bootleg stuff that you like. And so we send the crews out to interview the folks at the Flea, to interview the folks at the barbershop. And we do a web series for YouTube called Streets of Miami, The Cocaine Cowboys Phenomenon, about the bootlegging phenomenon of our movies. I mean, like, Lemon's Lemonade. And we start getting calls from Pitbull, from Trick Daddy, from Nori, from all these guys who want to do, they're like, I found the movie first. I turned my friends on in Atlanta, in Chicago. They wanted to take credit for discovering it on bootleg. The next thing you know, we're shooting like celebrity endorsements of the movie where these guys are just for free. They're sitting there rapping about, oh my God, my favorite character, and I love this line. And we intercut it with like their music videos and clips from the movie. And we created these like 2-3 minute mini celebrity infomercials for Cocaine Cowboys. And
send that to?
We put it on YouTube.
Oh.
And all of a sudden, because anybody searching for Pitbull, any of these artists would get these. So next thing you know, we got like millions of hits on these things. And the movie comes out on DVD.
Eyeballs equals dollars.
The movie comes out on DVD in January of 2007. And for the first, I think, 8 quarters, it was unprecedented in Magnolia home video history. We did better every quarter. You know, conventional wisdom is it's very weak opening weekend mentality. Yeah, you're going to move the most units. You're going to move your first week on DVD. This was the last gasp of, you know, physical media.
Actually,
then
it was a part of that. Jerry Maguire, when it came out, opening weekend was third behind The Preacher's Wife and Mars Attacks.
Jesus.
And then second week.
I thought Homeboys from Outer Space, the movie.
Oh, you know what? That would have been cool.
The big screen adaptation.
But Tom Cruise was in that as well. And then the second week, Mars Attack fell, and it was a Preacher's Wife. And then the third week, it was Jerry Maguire. And then it stayed that way for like a month.
Those were the days where that could still happen. That's awesome.
Not anymore. So Dogfight, this is a revolution. And Adam, and I don't say that lightly, this is a revolution. Adam Carolla raised money and made his own movie, Road Hard, through his fans. It made them all producers. And eventually we're going to have a bunch of people in the garage from that, you know, one of the things was, if you give this much, you can sit in on a More Stories episode. So this is what's happening. This is the listener's way of telling corporations that make volcano movies to go fuck themselves. Take your rich, fat, corpulent, billionaire white ass, go back to your mansion on your hill with V. Stiviano. Because this is what we want to watch, and we know where to get it because of places like podcasts, like Adam Carolla's podcast. I'm saying, you, my dear listener, you are now a part of a digital revolution. When people say no to brilliant people like Billy Corbin, you have the power to completely change the dynamic. And when you start buying Dogfight at $5 at CocaineCowboys.com. Enough of you guys already did it from my radio show, Jay Moore Sports. It was a big bump, Billy told me, on the way in.
Cocaine Cowboys reference.
When you guys buy this movie for $5, and when you guys buy stand-up comedy specials online for whatever, $5, $5, $5, we are making the billionaires that are ruining what we like obsolete. So embrace my man, Billy Corbin. The documentary, as Herman Edwards says, I put my name on it. Put your name on it. Be a man. Or a woman, put your name on it. It's Dogfight. Go to cocainecowboys.com. It's $5 freaking. What a... I mean, a bag of nuts is $4 at Gelson's. Literally, unsalted cashews is $3.99 at Gelson's. Dude, you can get a movie.
I was so hungry at the hotel, I ate the bag of gummy bears that was there. $7. So I really need two people to buy Dogfight right now I can pay for those fucking gummy bears in the hotel.
You cover Billy Corbin's gummy bear budget.
Honestly, I want to say, and I'm not just saying this because I told you before, but I'm not just saying this because there's a microphone in front of me, but I cannot thank you enough. We did see a Jay Moore bump, and because you did not suggest for people to buy it, you ordered, you commanded.
They must.
You commanded
have, you
your
have
listeners
to buy this
on, the,
movie.
On the radio, and it means a lot because it's like it transcends the $5, but it's more about, like you said, it's a vote. It's like the democratization of distribution. It's viewers getting to say, this is either not too urban, too violent, or too real, or it is, and that's what we like, or yeah, that's what we want to see.
And how many times do you watch TV or you watch a movie and you go, how did this pile of shit get made? This is the opposite of that.
All I think is Homeboys in Space. That's all I think now. I feel like every time you say that, that's exactly what you're talking about.
In Outer Space. Season 3, all asterisks and stars and like two brothers
and
like
in those days,
suits.
In those days.
And I was in Pluto Nash. I've been in bad space. I was in a space movie with black people.
Dude, I directed a movie called Cocaine Cowboys 2, Hustlin' with the Godmother. I know.
We know.
I in those days on UPM, I don't know what their seasons were like, but did season 3, meaning they'd already produced like 48 episodes of that show already?
I don't know.
Were those 24 episode seasons?
It's like my Vietnam. Like, I don't know, man.
You weren't there, man.
It was all a blur.
You don't know. You didn't see that mural.
We were fighting ghosts out there, man. Barnes been shot 6 times. Barnes ain't dead. You know what that means? Nothing can kill Barnes but Barnes. Y'all talking about death? Well, I'd like to hear about it, potheads. Billy Corbin, director of The U, broke Cocaine Cowboys, and now the movie that you will buy right now for $5 at cocainecowboys.com. It's called Dogfight. Tweet me. Is it at Billy Corbin? Are you on Twitter?
C-O-R-B-E-N. Yes, sir.
C-O-
at Billy Corbin.
Yeah.
Yeah. I spell it because people spell it with an I or with a G in the case of Billy Corgan.
Yeah. So tweet that you dug it, especially if you watched it.
She wrote Corbin with an I. That's it.
I did not, however, because I knew you were a fine Jewish boy. I knew there was an E at the end of that name. With your Zionist agenda.
There'd be a chai right at the right in the middle of it.
To life.
I'm from Miami. There should be an enye at the end of it, actually. Corbenye.
What's the mishigash with the dogfight? Yeah. No distribution. There's chazarai with who wants to watch it.
The other day, there was that story that broke that Jeb Bush had inadvertently checked Hispanic on his Florida voter registration application.
From the waist down.
And with
wait, what? Wait, what?
It tastes like plantains. So I immediately had to jump to, he's a big The U fan, The U Part 2 fan. I jumped to Jeb's defense and I said, after 36 years of living in Miami, I self-identify as Juban. Like, honestly, like, yeah. I do. Like, I feel like you become an honorary, you know,
owner
Cuban
of the Mavericks
over
and Magnolia,
time.
Mark Juban.
Yeah. They say, yeah, the great thing about Miami is that it's so close to the United States. So
we're not going to do better than that. Buy Dogfight, $5, Cocaine Cowboys, Billy Corbin. I wish everyone got this. That was awesome.
Thank you.
I put my name on it. We'll be right back.
Bang, bang, you're dead, holding you.